what happens when you combine Dungeons and Dragons and Lord of the Rings and... Wait a second, is that Ganondorf? We're talking about the Record of Lodoss War. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd, where it's anime, and we are talking about those anime that were one-time big hits, but that nobody really seems to be talking about anymore. And this week, we are talking about Record of Lodoss War. My name is Drew, and I need the character whose name I don't actually hear said out loud until the third episode. Miles, how are you, my friend?
How are you doing? I'm doing okay. Which character are you talking about?
Woodchuck. You don't hear Woodchuck's name said out loud until the third episode.
Oh, I think in the dub you do.
In the Japanese version, I do not recall it because it was, or they might have called him Wood and I didn't notice.
I think it's something like that. I think they say his name in the first episode in the dub. This will be interesting because Drew watched the Japanese subtitle version and I watched the dubbed version because I thought that's what we were trying to do, was to watch these things as we would have seen them back then.
I think I might have said that in passing and then changed my mind when all I could find was the dub of Project Echo last week. But... I meant to watch some of the dub of this as well and didn't get the chance to because I ran out of time. But Record of Lodoss War, this.
So I know I actively probably didn't watch this as a kid. The animation looks familiar enough that I know I saw it at the video store, and I know I either saw a commercial for it or maybe I saw an episode in passing flipping through the channels at some point, but I know I never sat down and watched it. Did you?
No. So I knew of it because, again, we have talked repeatedly on this about the Sci-Fi Channel's Saturday anime section, which mm-hmm. was, you know, Saturday mornings on Sci-Fi Channel, they'd play anime. And boy, did they play some anime. They played Akira during that block.
Obviously, that's how I saw Akira.
Yeah, obviously it was a TV cut of Akira. So when I watched Akira for real several years later and there were some scenes that were not in the show, I was like, whoa. They played a lot of really cool stuff. But most of it, I'll be honest, was like sci-fi oriented because that was a lot of what anime was back in the 80s and early 90s, which is a lot.
Well, it's also what sci-fi was gonna play.
It's also, yeah, that's true. I guess it is the Sci-Fi Channel. But one of the exceptions to that was the Record of Lodoss War, and which is very high fantasy, and we'll talk about sort of the inspiration of what this show is and what it comes from. But because it was super high fantasy and I liked science fiction, I never bothered to watch it. I would watch something else on the Saturdays that they would show this. And, you know, that was probably a mistake back in the day, I gotta say. But let's get into what this show is. So Record of Lodoss War did not start as an anime. It actually started as what they call a replay of a Dungeons and Dragons campaign. So the writer Ryu Mizuno, who I don't know much of anything else that he has done, though he has written a ton of novels and a bunch of, he seems to be more of a novelist and writer and not a, you know, TV writer or things like that. But he created this world called Forcellia as a role playing. Like basically as kind of a place that you could use the Dungeons and Dragons rules to play games in. So with that, they would play games and they would basically release the transcripts of those games as what they called replays in magazines in the 80s. And I I'm a little shocked, you know, because, you know, I don't know if, I mean, I know our longtime listeners know that Miles and I have been on a tabletop role-playing podcast for several years now.
Sure. That, closing in on a decade, bro.
We started
in 2017, right?
It's 2017. So it's eight years.
We're closing in.
But so I was kind of surprised, but also not at all surprised to learn that people were into this content well before it was recorded and published in.
Like, oh, a, I mean, a, there was a, you know, whole way. Phenomenon in the 80s about it.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't a D&D kid. I came to D&D as a grown adult, so it's like.
Yeah, I mean, well, we can talk about that kind of stuff. And I think we have before when we had Patrick do some advanced D&D/Pathfinder for the two of us way back when. But I do think this is very, very cool. Where, yeah, they took a campaign that they had done and then just novelized it, and then it became even bigger.
Yeah, so they take this campaign. They've released it. He then takes it, turns it into an actual novel, sells the actual novel, and that gets picked up. There are a lot of novels. Like, there are, golly, so many novels of this. At least 7 or 8 of the main ones of the Record of Lodos War. But then there's The Legend of Lodos. There's The Next Generation. Miles has talked about a video game that I'm sure will come up after we get into talking about some of these characters. But in 1990, they decided to create and put out an OVA series, The Record of Lodos War, which is overall 13 episodes. I guess we should talk about what an OVA is, because this is something that we sort of drop that term a lot, because we're old and we know what it is, but I imagine we might have some younger listeners out there or some listeners that just don't know about anime production that haven't heard the term OVA before.
And especially if you are, I mean, this isn't even to sound a certain way. If you were younger and, like, you know, you kind of came of age, like, say you were born in, like, 2000 and you came of age in 2015, OVAs are not really a part of your life at all. Because, yeah. I mean, they were still in production up until, I would say, they were still prevalent in the aughts. But I think in the last 15 years, they have kind of become obsolete with the streaming era.
Yeah, especially as anime TV series episode counts have shrunk. the sort of propensity to make OVAs has also shrunk. OVA is sometimes also called OAV. I think that just depends on, you know, whatever. But
you know what's so funny? Now that you mentioned that, it wasn't until you said that I was like, that might have been the first thing I did here. Was OAV. I don't know why, but that as soon as you said that, that's like unlocked something in my brain that, like, maybe from like reading a magazine, and not even like this is like pre-new type days. I would have been reading like a Wizard magazine or maybe even an EGM or GameFAQs or something.
And internet forums was either OAV or OVA, just depending on which forum you were on. God, we're old, Miles. Anyway, but basically, so you when we think about it in like American terms, in Western terms, you've got a TV show or you've got a movie. And maybe you have something called a direct-to-video release. And the direct-to-video release is usually a movie that is not lower budget and not good enough to actually get a theatrical release. Well, in Japan, and we're not going to cover the why of this because we didn't do that much research on it. In Japan, when it comes to anime specifically, the OVA was direct-to-video, but it was like premium direct-to-video. they had higher budgets. Often when you bought this on video cassette, because that's what how they were. I'm sure there were Betamax OVAs as well.
They probably were, because Betamax was Japanese, I think, and at the time it was still superior.
It was a Sony format. But basically what these are super high quality products. So you might not have 50 episodes. You might only have 8 or 12 or, you know, whatever.
But 10. They might be an hour long.
But they might be an hour long. They might be 40 minutes long. And the animation quality itself is several steps up above what would have been TV animation at the time. It would have been like movie animation at the time, but more
of honestly, having just rewatched Vampire Hunter D and comparing it to Record of Lotus War, the animation in Record of Lotus War is better in terms of production quality.
Yeah.
Like
it was because it was this premium experience that because you were buying this tape and it was spending however much money it cost in 1990 to buy a single episode of something on a videotape. Which
were they sold as single episodes, or was it like, you know, two or three?
They were sold as single episodes. For example,
That's pricey.
Yeah, the Lotus War was the 30th of every month, starting in June of 1990 until November of 1991.
That's so kind of exciting. It's like, it's almost like buying a video comic, you know? Yeah,
it's such a weird, weird thing that we don't really have an American comparison to, or a direct comparison to.
Not really, no. I mean, there have been people who have done something similar or tried this sort of approach one way or the other, but like nothing like that in terms of like, this was the way.
Yeah. So let's get it. So this is how this was released. And so we talked about a movie last week. Here's our first OVA. And let's get into this, because this OVA starts kind of in the middle of things, and you don't really know what's going on.
I kind of dig the in medias res. I mean, this is also how a lot of campaigns begin, where it's like, okay, everyone's together, and then you'll have like a little bit of the action, and then a pause, and then okay, we're gonna step back. And I mean, this has happened on our podcast plenty of times, where like we'll have these moments of flashbacks. And so this first episode is all like the kind of quote unquote current action. And then we take a step back and like, this is how the party came to be.
Yeah. So we have our characters. And when I say that these are some D&D characters, we've got Parn, the knight, Deedlit, the elf, who seems to be she uses a sword, but also has some magic abilities.
She's a light elf. White elf.
Geem the dwarf, who uses an axe. Woodchuck the thief uses daggers. Slain the wizard, who has this cool magic staff and cool powers. And Eto the cleric, who can heal people.
And so you got a black mage, a white mage. You've got your rogue. You've got your paladin. You've got your soldier/knight character. No, it's perfect. And then I also love the dwarf. His name Geem.
Yeah,
you're so close to Gimli.
The dwarf is named Geem. This episode starts with them going into an abandoned dwarven mine passageway city
tunnel. Yeah,
tunnel, and the dwarf and the elf ribbing each other the entire time.
Oh yes, it is like, very much. I mean, but then also this is a post Tolkien and post D&D, this is kind of the accepted sort of like, okay, these characters are kind of enemies, but they're not hostile enemies. Like they're frenemies at best.
But like when I say that, like if I closed my eyes, I have Deedlit and Legolas and Geem and Gimli. And it's the same script from Lord of the Rings.
It really is. Also, it doesn't help that the dwarf's name is Geem. Like, yeah. There is that.
It's sad that it took you saying that a minute ago for that to even click for me.
That was the first thing I thought of. I will say the first thing I really thought of when I was watching this animation, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna hold this opinion until I get done with the four episodes to see if I still feel this way. And I do. This series is so high on production quality that it is, and this is going to sound weird, but this show is what I remember 90s, 80s anime being like in my memory in terms of like all these cool adventures and like how, like, because you go back and watch stuff and you're like, oh, that's rough. This show is as good as I remember these shows being as a kid. That is not something that happens very often. I will often say that, like, oh yes, like Stranger Things, very similar. Like, that's how we like to remember the 80s and being a kid and kids on bikes and all that stuff, even though your childhood is probably not that fun.
Yes.
This show, in terms of its production quality, is exactly what I like to remember that era of anime being. Like, I am so impressed with how good this show looks.
It looks really good. And what's funny is that the illustrator of the show, which who did the character illustrations, the character animations, I'm not going to talk too much about this guy. Miles has only heard the surface scratching of me researching this guy. He's a guy named Yutaka Izubuchi. And when I say Izubuchi, when I read that in the credits, I was like, wait a second. Yeah, Yutaka Izubuchi is huge in Gundam mechanical designs. Like, gonna break, it's broken, it's fallen apart, but he designed this one. He designed the new Gundam, one of the coolest Gundams in the entire franchise. He designed the Gundam Alex from 0080. He's done so many. He also did the Sazabi from
which
Stars Counter,
wasn't 0080 also an OVA?
Yes, it was also an OVA. But he also worked on the series. He's worked on several of the series and several of the movies.
You said he didn't design my favorite though, right?
He did not design your favorite. No, that was a different person. He was not
Yakushiki, for those who don't know.
Yeah, he was like a teenager studying to be a salaryman while being super interested in kaiju and Ultraman and all of this stuff, and he got some of his first works were creating monsters for tokusatsu shows.
The dream.
Yeah, I know. Because he
but
was
also you hear these stories and I'm like, yeah, once upon a time you could just kind of show up at some place and bug them enough to like give you a job.
Well, that's the thing. He was a teenager and he just said, hey, I would like to. He was involved in these like magazine like mail-in columns that would then turn into big like multi-hour long meetups that they would do, and eventually a group of these guys were invited to meet with this producer on the show and then creator on the show, and that guy liked his portfolio of work so much that he brought him in to do part-time stuff, and that has turned into an entire career in an industry. And that's just stuff doesn't happen anymore, and it certainly hasn't happened in America in a very long time. But yeah, his designs for these were for everything in here is pretty good and very, very high fantasy, but with a bit of a different flair because it is anime, you know. I'm gonna put this away so I don't play with it the entire time. Also, I have to talk about the voice cast in this because this is like truly some of the best known people in anime. So the voice of Parn, our sort of main character, is Takeshi Kusao. He's best known for, you know, he was Kai in Akira. He's been in a bunch of other things, mostly known for playing Trunks in Dragon Ball Z and Dragon Ball, all the Dragon Ball stuff. You have Yumi Toma, who played Deedlit, our elf. She is not as well known to me. She's done a bunch of stuff in other anime that we may be covering. she does a lot of video game work. She is Ivy in Soul Calibur. She's Ivy from that game. She's been in Dirty Pair. She's been in a bunch of that stuff. You've got Eto, who is who played by Kape Yamaguchi. Eto is sort of, he's our cleric character. He may be best known on our show as playing a little ticket taking puppet from Tokuger called Ticket.
Oh, that's so cool.
But he was also Ranma Saotome in Ranma One Half. He was Inuyasha in Inuyasha. He's Usopp in One Piece. He's L in Death Note. Like, this is a guy that's working. He has also reprised his role as Ticket in the not so latest anymore series, Boon Boomger of the Super Sentai world, which is great. Slain, next up is Slain, who is our sorcerer. He also has done a ton of anime voices, including a bunch of stuff on Detective Conan and things like that. But he's Otacon in the Metal Gear Solid games.
Cool.
He's also the voice of D in Vampire Hunter D.
Oh, that's hilarious, because I just watched.
Yeah, as you're just talking about.
So the English voice cast,
I'm not done, Miles. I'm not done.
Oh my God.
I'm not done. Let me get through a couple more of these people. Ichiro Nagai is the narrator of the show, and he is the narrator of a bunch of shows. He was D's left hand in Vampire Hunter D, and he was also, nice, the narrator of the original Mobile Suit Gundam series. Yoshiko Sakakibara, who is our villain of the piece, Carla, the witch Carla, she has been in a bunch of stuff. She was all over Pat Labor as one of the main characters of Pat Labor, but she was also Haman Karn in the Mobile Suit Gundam series, one of the greatest villains in that series. I'm doing a lot of these. I'm sorry. Our boy Woodchuck, Norio Wakamoto, he was Vicious in Cowboy Bebop.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and of course a bunch of other stuff. He's also the voice of Cell in Dragon Ball Z and associated Dragon Ball related stuff. Who else? I got two more. I'm sorry. Don't know why. Oh, Geem. I didn't know Geem from much. He was a pretty big voice actor. Sadly, a couple of these cast members have passed away since then. But he was in Jinro. He was in JoJo's. But of course, I have to say the one last.
I'm gonna pass away if you take much longer.
Hey. The last one I'm gonna talk about is a guy that we only see in literally one scene in this, but I know he's gonna be a big deal. Is King Kashue, the other king that we meet in the first episode, and he is of course played by Shar Azdabal himself, Shuichi Ikeda. So. That was it. I just wanted to get there. I just, again, this is a big time thing. Thank you for going down voice actor alley with me as I close a bunch of tabs. Tell me about the English cast.
So the most of them aren't as well known. They've done a few voices here or there. The biggest one is Lisa Ortiz, who voices D-Lit. She has been, I think still is, the voice of Amy in the Sonic franchise.
Interesting. Her name, when I saw it, because I hadn't watched the dub yet, her name is super familiar. And she's one of the few members of the cast that has a picture on her IMDb page. So
yes, exactly. She has done a lot of stuff. I mean, she's done some a lot of classic 90s OVAs, including, you know, your Gunbusters, which we're not watching for this month, and has done a lot of video game stuff, some Silent Hill, some Pokemon. A lot of people who were involved did do some Pokemon, and a lot of them were just various different voices. And then she's heavily involved in a franchise that I am not familiar with, though I know was very, very popular amongst, I think, Gen Z, which is Winx.
Winx Club, baby. Winx Club. That's all I know.
Yeah, so she is several characters in that, appearing in 79 episodes.
Wow.
So I think she's a major one. And also Larissa Olenek is in that show, which I didn't know. Alex Mack herself. But no, she has a lot of work. And then the voice actor for, I believe it's Parn, has done a lot of acting. Used to do a lot of voice acting. Did some Mobile Suit Gundam Stardust Memory. Some.
Who was he in that? I'm just curious.
Additional voices.
Ah.
And then I didn't find what he did, but it said that he was in several episodes of the original dub for Gatcha Man. As well as various voices and additional voices in many, many anime throughout the 90s. Until it looks like he started doing some after about the turn of the millennium, started doing some live action stuff. He pops up in 12 Monkeys and Mr. Robot and stuff like that. And has every now and then we'll do like a Pokemon thing or a couple of bits here and there, but mostly just some old anime. So it's, they got some talent in this, and even if some of them didn't go very far, like some of them I just hard to kind of track down, but this is a pretty, both dub and sub is a pretty great voice cast, which is, you know, we mentioned this last week where sometimes you would have a situation where that dub was rough. It was usually very cartoony voices in some instances, or voices that had a completely different script. I don't know about the script in this case, but I will say that the voice cast for the dub was really solid.
Yeah. So let's get into talking about some of these episodes. We only watched four because this has been a rough time week for me personally. But yeah, so we talk about the first episode, which takes place in Medias Res as they are going through this dwarven tunnel. And they're trying to get to a sage named Wart we kind of see him talking to the evil witch Carla. And there is something about Carla and Wart's history that we are not told and don't know. And we don't know why they're going to see Wart other than they're told to go and find him. And of course, like you do when you go through any ancient dwarven thing, they pick a fight with a dragon and have to fight. Well, first they get attacked by stone creatures that come to life. And then they have to also fight a dragon. And I don't know, that dragon kind of goes out pretty easily for my taste. But, you know, that's me.
Well, you also get the impression that there are different kinds of dragons and different kind of levels of dragons. So this I don't think was like a big bad dragon.
Yeah, yeah. But once we start out with episode two, Blazing Departure, which is, man, that's a that's a title.
It's a title, and boy does it live up to it.
Yeah, this is really, again, where if you thought the first episode was D&D, this episode is some D&D, as we are getting character backstory after character backstory and all of the ways that these characters interact with each other, and some of the characters know each other and some of the characters don't know each other at all, and of course it ends up in a fight because that always happens in D&D campaigns. So we basically start off with Geem, who is and our dwarf, and he is out to find this girl named Lelia who has disappeared several years ago. And then we skip over to Parn's village, where Parn is not in armor yet. He is just kind of a dude. And there's a girl from his village named Liara that's being attacked by goblins. And he sort of attacks them to defend her. And Miles, this is where I have to say the one negative that I have about this show. Every female character that is not Deedlit looks exactly the same. They all have long, wavy black hair I yeah, just can't tell them apart.
I mean, you're not entirely wrong. But also that is, I will say, a little bit of the time as well. Like, a lot of these characters had very similar designs depending on the type of anime it was. If you were the kind of fantasy style, more square looking anime that some of these characters are, you had a specific style. If you did something like Project Eiko, where everyone looked like that style. And so, like, you do have these set styles in, I mean, you do today as well, but there was a consistent style in this genre, I feel like, that this feels right, though.
Yeah, it does. I like the style a lot. And, you know, it's also kind of funny that if every other female character that interacts with you looks like the others, except for Deedlet, and I guess Carla also looks pretty different because she's decked out. It's just kind of funny because, you know, it's like casting the same actress in a role that keeps coming back.
But also, like, they do the same thing with, like, the soldiers for the castle and stuff. Like, they all look the same, too.
Yes, yeah.
like even the captain, like, the blonde, like, straight-laced looking guy. Like, oh, okay, I thought I just saw you, like, 10 seconds ago, and that was a different character altogether.
Exactly. So, yeah, the thing about the goblins, because Parn and Liara go back to the goblins and meet up with Eto on the way. And Eto, we learn, is a childhood friend of Parn's who has gone off to study to be a priest of the religion. And there's two, again, they do a lot of world building in narration, and I don't remember a lot of it. But let's just say there is an old goddess that was for the light and an old goddess that was for the dark. And Eto is a priest of the goddess of the light. And their names are like one syllable different, so I just couldn't remember them off the top of my head. So they go back to the village, and now that the goblins have been attacked, all the villagers are worried that the goblins are going to attack out of revenge. Meanwhile, Gim is meeting up with Slain, the sorcerer, who also happens to live in this village. So, unlike meeting in the tavern, they're all meeting in the village. And while all of this is going on, and we do see that there is this sort of, like, super goblin, and you can tell he's a super goblin because he's got pupils in his eyes, and all the other goblins just have white eyes. He seems to be enchanting the goblins with some sort of, like, weird dark magic. And Deedlet, who just happens to be in the area, sees this and kind of follows them to the village. And meanwhile, and of course, at the end, all of this is going to involve a big battle where our team comes together and Satan knocks the goblins out of their stupor and sort of takes care of the, like, super goblin that had seemingly been like enchanting them. But as a result, the villagers no longer want Parn in the village at all. They want him to be banished. We find out that his father was apparently banished at some point as well. And
also that they're supposed to, I think there's like, at least in the English version, that there's apparently some sort of truce between the humans and the goblins, and by him killing one of the goblins, they broke that truce, which is why the goblins attack.
Right. But it's not why the goblins attack. It's why the villagers think the goblins attack.
Because
they don't know about the super goblin that was saving everything. Luckily, though, the mayor of the town does know, and he likes Parn, and Parn saved his daughter. So instead of exiling him, he sends him away in order to go and tell the king what happened in the village, and figure out what's going on with all this other stuff. And so it's kind of solving both sides of the same coin, which I say, good job, mayor. That's good mayoring. You get to give Parn.
So they call him a mayor in the Japanese version.
Well, I mean, he's that's how it's subtitled. So I don't know what the actual title is.
I think they call him a king. Like the each little, like, Hamlet has its own little king, and so he's the king of that little area. and sends him out for the same reason. But I think they call him a king or a lord of some kind. I know he's called my lord, at least.
Interesting. Well, in the Japanese, he's just the mayor. Now, we do meet a bunch of other kings starting in the next episode.
I have a hard time like thinking of a medieval setting and then calling someone the mayor. it seems like such a modern convention, you know what I mean? Like, what if there was a mayor, just a guy in like a pinstripe suit, like a Troy McClure type?
I see. You don't pawn, my boy.
It might be best. Yeah.
Go step aside, my son. Let's talk about this for a moment. I don't think it might be best if you skedaddle for a little while. You know what I mean? All right.
See, I would love that. I would love for that to be the case.
In the next episode, The Black Knight, we've seen some blood and violence in the show before. Again, it's an OVA, and that's just another thing that OVAs were allowed to do. They could be more graphic in a lot of different ways. Though this show seems to be more graphic in the one way than the other way, it's also, at least so far, we only watched the first four episodes, not the most graphic anime I've ever seen, which I think is kind of interesting for the time as well. But this is where we are introduced to who I presume is going to be the bad guy, but maybe not the bad guy. He may end up being a sub boss.
Mm-hmm.
And that is King Beld of Marmo. And you may know him by another name, which is Ganondorf, because that's exactly what he looks like. He looks like Ganondorf from the Legend of Zelda games, like down to skin tone and hair color and all of this stuff. I would be. And this of course came out several years before we saw Ganondorf for the first time in Ocarina of Time. I would not be surprised if there was some artistic license used in that.
Yes.
But yeah, at this point, the Marmans, they don't really, I forget what they actually call their army, but they're basically taking everybody out. We are introduced to and then see destroyed like two or three different little tiny kingdoms very, very quickly. We get some kobolds, but really this is where we meet Woodchuck for the first time, as our group is thrown into jail by these guys that think they're spies, these soldiers that think they're spies. But as it turns out, no, sorry. It was just that our captain wasn't here to solve our problems for us. And then they're then released. And Parn goes and saves Woodchuck from the dungeon when the dungeon is collapsing. And that seems to have had in great fantasy roles, like this guy that seems to be only out for himself. Oh, someone came back to save me. I guess I better stick around this guy because he seems pretty cool. That sort of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that Han Solo vibe is going to carry through with this character as they go through. And yeah, the final episode is just more of that, except we are reintroduced to some more of the big bad, who I think is probably the real big bad, the witch Carla, as she seems to be embodying the body of Lelia, who Gim is trying to find. But we also have the reappearance of King Fawn that we saw in the first episode, as he has dispatched his daughter to go establish an alliance with a kingdom that they don't know has already been conquered. And Parn and his group save her life, and of course they are going to probably go and meet the king and we'll get closer to the first episode, which I read kind of takes place between episode 5 and 6, so there might be some more stuff on there. So yeah, it's kind of tough to talk about this because a lot of this stuff is very boilerplate, super obvious fantasy stuff. But
I mean, the thing is, I do feel like I'm watching somebody's D&D campaign, and I kind of love that.
Woodchuck throws the dagger into the dragon's eye in the first episode, it's like, oh, he just rolled a 20 is what popped up in my head.
Exactly, because this character kind of gets his ass handed to him through most of the rest of the show that we've seen. So I do love these moments where, like, okay, everyone gets something, and yes, sometimes, hey, Parn gets a good show, and then other times, like, he's swinging his sword like he's done it the first time,
which as we learn in episode 2 or episode 3, episode 3, it is his first time. He is not a badass knight, he is a newbie, and Gim makes fun of him for it with some of the best lines.
I hope you had a good line, because my favorite line that he says is, "You couldn't kill time."
Yes, that is the line. That's the line.
I died laughing.
It was, like, awesome. It was hilarious.
I genuinely laughed out loud. I was like, that is one of the best lines I have heard in quite some time.
It was great. It was excellent. That line is in the Japanese as well. In the subtitles, but.
And yeah, I mean, yes, is it tropey? Sure, but it's doing the best with these tropes. I mean, like, honestly, outside of his namesake, Gimli, Gim is some of the best dwarf writing I've read in quite some time. I've watched. Like, I mean, he's, and again, this is, 35 years old or whatever, but, this is a blast. Yeah, and
there was a moment in, again, I think it's the first episode, because, we see he watches, he and Deedlit have been sort of ribbing each other, and she does the classic anime nose pointed up look towards him a lot, which is very anime. Honestly, I talk about, we talk about the designs in the show. Deedlit is maybe the most anime of any of the designs. Like, she looks the most like traditional anime style,
and hilariously the most iconic character from the show.
Yeah. Because everybody else looks like an attempt to do Western styled characters, like medieval styled Dungeons and Dragons characters. But she does something really cool, and Game compliments her on it. And they're like, oh, so you're, you make fun of her all this time, but then you think she does a good job. It's like, well, what am I gonna do? I forget the specific line, but it's like,
there's a similar situation in the dub too. Yeah,
it's like, I'm gonna, I'm not gonna compliment somebody when they do a good job. Like,
yeah, it was something like that. So okay, that's cool to know that the dub and the subtitles are at least using similar scripts, if not the same one.
Which is interesting to me, because the one thing that we should probably talk about, and it's not always the case, but there was a time frame where things were dub titled, which, again, this is anime DVD world, but I know it happened way back in the day in VHS tapes too, where they had an English script for the dub, and they just used that English script for the subtitled Japanese version, even though it wasn't the most accurate translation of stuff to what the Japanese dialogue was actually saying. I don't know if this was dub titled or not. It sounds like it wasn't. I think that's something that happened a lot more later on. But it does sound like it's pretty close so far, which is good. I like that. I should go back and watch some of this with the dub just to see hear it happen. Record of Lodos War. This is, and again, we only watched the first four episodes of 13. And I gotta say, like, I kind of hate that I kept myself from this. I don't know that I really would have loved it at the time, because I don't know that I had the appreciation for not just fantasy stuff, but tabletop RPGs then. I mean, I definitely didn't have a tabletop RPG appreciation back then, because I hadn't played one and wouldn't for another 20 years. But watching this, it's like, yeah, I can definitely tell. I can see all of the D&D roots that this grew out of. I wonder sort of, and I guess I say I wonder why it's lost. This is maybe one of the things we're talking about. This one has come up continuously, including a game that Miles played in the last year on the PS5.
Yeah, D-Lit in Wonder Labyrinth. And which I want to talk about D-Lit a little bit, just because, like, you see her style, her animation, and you kind of expect, you know, not quite maybe a Legolas, but you'd certainly expect, like, kind of a solemn, like, serious elf. And she is not that at all.
Well, she can just be. She kind of goes back and forth between.
She goes back and forth, but, like, when you first meet her, she is not that at all. And I kind of love that about her character, which is so funny because, yeah, my only interaction with this franchise was there was a Metroidvania game that came out called Record of Lost War, D-Lit in Wonder Labyrinth, that takes place, I think, like, right before whatever the follow-up series was, the actual television series.
Yeah, which is, I think, set hundreds of years later.
Yeah. And it's a Metroidvania with a phenomenal pixel art where you play as D-Lit, and it's very kind of influenced by... style-wise, they said Ikaruga in terms of, like, its visual style, which I can kind of see, but in terms of the gameplay style, it was very Symphony of the Night. And so if you like those kind of games, even if you have zero interaction with this franchise, as I did, I just played the game because it looked great. And yeah, it's a more fantasy-themed, although not by much, because you're in a castle labyrinth. So you're basically just playing a D-Lit-themed Castlevania, and it's very, very good.
Apparently, it's not set that long after, because the in-game shop in the game is run by Geem. So,
well, don't dwarves live for 100 years too?
I don't know that.
Because I think they live for a long time as well. So that could possibly be the thing.
Yeah, I don't know that. Oh, it's definitely before. As I look at a character's thing, it's definitely before certain stuff. spoilers.
I mean, I played the game, so.
Yeah, I mean.
It's been about a year since I played it, but.
Yeah, I just mean I'm looking up some stuff about some characters, and
but I think I saw it was 100 years after the OVA series.
We'll talk off air. But yeah, so I just it's tough to talk more about it because we didn't get a look at the whole thing just because we didn't have time. But man, OVA animation, it again, Miles and I, the two of us, camera zoom in. Don't worry, this will come through in the audio that the camera zoomed in on my face. Hand-drawn animation is so freaking nice. And I'm not saying that you can't have good CG animation and good CG anime animation, because it definitely happens, and I'm watching a series that has some fantastic stuff in it. But nothing will ever top, to me, high quality 1980s and 1990s Japanese animation for the stuff that it does. It took effort, and when that effort plays off, that effort shows. Like, we talk about a movie like Redline that we covered on this show, gosh, 3 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a newer movie, came out in like 2008, 2009, but it didn't use any CG animation. It used hand-drawn animation. And when you watch those mechanical designs moving and you watch the characters moving, and you just know it's all just frame by frame by frame by frame, somebody and multiple people's, like, heart and soul were put into that. And it just shows on the screen. And that's what all of these anime back in the day were. You could see in TV anime where they cut corners and had repeated animation or stuff like that. But in something like this, in an OVA series like this, and in Project Echo that we watched last week, that was just animators themselves doing everything, and what I presume next week's anime is going to be, I'm really hopeful to see some of that come to life again, because there's just something special about it. I'm not saying that anime is better than, you know, any other kind of animation. I'm just saying that it scratches an itch that a lot of other animation just doesn't hit for me.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm never going to not love just classic hand-drawn animation. I do like some of the more modern series and some of its animation styles as well, depending on what they're doing.
Sure.
Especially with your more slice of lifey stuff. But yeah, when it comes to, like, you know, I will always prefer something that was, you know, touched by folks, you know, and you can always tell there's always a little bit of extra oomph to it. Like, you brought up Redline, like, legitimately one of the most visually satisfying animated films I have ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of that is color, the use of color. Like, this show in particular is kind of muted in the color, and I think stylistically. I think it's just also that, like, when you're...
It's not just the color, it's the texture.
The texture. And when you're... And also when you're talking about standard definition stuff, like, you know, a lot of... colors don't pop in SD the way they pop in HD. It's just the nature of the game. But that doesn't mean that you can't have room for both. So, yeah, let's close the book for now on Record of Lodoss War. I'm sorry that I never watched you in the 90s, but I'm glad to get a look at you
today. Yeah, this is definitely something I will definitely probably try to watch to completion at some point in the future, because it's just really, really good.
Yeah.
And, like, if you've got a fantasy itch, this will definitely scratch it.
And especially if you like TTRPG campaigns, like watching a 90s anime TTRPG campaign is a weird thing to say.
I mean, if you want to watch Critical Role before Critical Role or Vox Machina, like, this is it.
Yeah. So let's talk about next week, Miles.
All right.
Next week, we are going to watch one that I have always heard the name. I've heard the name over and over and over again, and I've never once watched it, despite the fact that it seems entirely up my alley. This is one that never aired on Saturday Anime, which is probably why I didn't see it, and basically probably was one I was not allowed to rent from the store. It is the Cyberpunk OVA Bubblegum Crisis.
Yeah, this is certainly one that I remember seeing in all of my comic book magazines and gaming magazines, and actually even my sci-fi and horror magazines, seeing posters at the comic shop and seeing the videotapes at the store. I just never saw it. But this is one that I certainly remember its presence. I don't even really know that much about it. I used to also confuse it with the Dirty Pair.
I have repeatedly done that in my head as we have been preparing.
I'm glad I'm not the only person. So I'm really excited
I chose Bubblegum Crisis over Dirty Pair because I assumed Dirty Pair was going to be just that one foot over the line of stuff, but I don't know that this isn't. So
I'm very excited to watch this because it's one of those ones that I just never even did that much research about. So, like, I'm kind of going in blind, and I'm really excited. And I'm doubly excited that our good friends, who should give us some free stuff at Peacock, are coming through again randomly. Like, this entire year is, like, really brought to us by Peacock.
When did Peacock get anime? I don't know, but...
Here's the thing about Peacock is they have such a deep catalog, and you wouldn't know it by their UI. Like, there's no good way to explore, and that's what's awful about it.
Well, it's because the Peacock wants you to just watch NBC content, and this is just stuff that they also happen to have.
Right, and which is crazy. What's the NBC Universal? So they have their fingers on a lot of pies, and it's just like, oh man, they've got access to so many things that unless you look up, you don't know that they have, and they've got a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So with that said, that's going to be next week. Oh, but wait. It's not going to be on the normal day. You're not going to get this episode next Wednesday. I'm so sorry. You're going to get it next Friday, because Miles and I decided we are having so much fun watching Macross 7 together that we want to open it up. We know Thursday nights are not always the best for some folks to come and hang out with us. So we're actually going to watch Macross 7 on Tuesday night instead of Thursday night, just to see if we can get a few more people to come and hang out with us, because it's been so much fun going through this show. Miles, I love Macross 7. It is the first real full sequel television series to the original Macross that we watched just last year on anime. We have watched the first 5 episodes so far. So there's plenty of time to catch up before Tuesday, if you want to hang out with us. Miles, tell me the experience of watching the first 5 episodes and maybe some things that listeners want to pay attention to if they want to come and join us.
So Drew knew for a fact that this show was extremely Miles coded. And so initially we were going to watch either Macross 7 or Macross Frontiers. He's currently trying to distract me with, is it an F-19?
A VF-19 fire Valkyrie. Yeah.
That is used in the show. But I was so taken by Macross 7 entirely that we didn't even get through an entire episode of Macross Frontiers, which was also very, very good. But Macross Frontier takes place, was it 50 years after the original?
Yeah, Macross Frontier takes place, I think it's like 50 or 55.
And takes place on the new Macross.
Well, the 7 is 40 years. Sorry,
45. Okay. And focuses on a band, which I was like, all right, I'm in. And most importantly, focuses on the guitarist / lead singer, Basara, who is quickly becoming one of my favorite anime protagonists. Like, he is awesome. He controls his mech with his guitar. Does he fight? No. He sings. Like, it is great. And when he fires missiles from his VF-19 Firebomber?
Fire Valkyrie. Fire Bomber is the band.
Fire Bomber is the band. Great. They're not bullets. They are speakers. So that it amplifies what he's singing. And the songs are pure 90s J-rock stewed to perfection.
Yeah, it's not J-pop. It's J-rock. And it rules.
It is. It's great. It takes some of the ideas that was explored in the, I don't want to say protoculture because that's too punny, but like the actual culture of Macross, of the Macross city, and kind of explores it further. And I really, really love what they're doing. The style is fantastic. It's a great looking anime. We're still getting to know the characters, but like it's got a good frenetic energy. There are some surprises if you've watched the original Macross that might delight or bum you out, depending. Both, really. And every single episode so far has been an absolute treat. I know I said we were going to try to like go into them, but since we kind of gave everyone a heads up, we'll wait till next week before we kind of do some of our recap stuff, maybe get people interested in joining us. But if you have time between now and next Tuesday at 8:45?
Let's do Tuesday at 8:45. That'll be Tuesday, whatever that
May 20th.
Is. May 20th.
Tuesday at 8:45, join us on the Cosmic Crit Discord. Make sure you have a Hulu subscription.
Yeah, unfortunately, this does require a Hulu subscription. It is on Disney, but I'm not going to get into it because it's annoying. It's all branded Disney, but it's not on Disney in the U.S. It's on Hulu in the U.S., but it's on Disney literally everywhere else. So you do have to have a Hulu subscription, which I know not everybody has. And you need to get the plugin for the website Scener, Scener. That is what we are doing to sync up everybody's watching so that we can all watch it together and have a good time. I'm excited. We have watched episodes 1 through 5 already. You could probably watch episode 1 and episode 4 or an episode 5 and probably catch up pretty good. But it's, you know, it's 5 episodes. If we can watch 5 episodes in a week, you guys can watch 5 episodes in a week. Okay. But we just want people to come and hang out with us because we are having a blast. And even if it's just me and Miles, we'll keep doing this until the show is complete because I love it.
Yeah, I'm loving it too. I'm forcing myself. I haven't done it yet. I thought about making a playlist of the songs that I've listened to in the show because I don't want to really spoil myself. I know it's only been super stupid.
It's only been three songs.
I know, but like, I just want to let it ride. And I don't want to be surprised when I want to be surprised when a new song pops up, but I have really loved the three that I have heard so far.
It's either Seventh Moon, which is the opening title track.
No. It is
Planet Dance, which is.
Yes, it's Planet Dance, the duet version.
Oh, Planet Dance.
I have replayed a lot, and especially when they have the conveniently part, like all the stuff in English is in all caps so you can sing along, which I greatly appreciate. I am loving Macross 7. I don't want to say it's my favorite in the franchise so far. It's still too early to say. And I did love everything until the time jump in the original Macross. And I really liked Zero. Didn't seem very Macrossy, but it was
Zero
fine.
Zero is its own thing. Like, I like Zero enough. I don't love Zero.
Exactly. I liked it fine. I wouldn't be upset to own it, but I'm not going to rush out for it. It's very Avatar-y. But yeah, Macross 7 is my shiz for sure.
It is its own thing, and it proudly wears that. So if you would,
I love it.
If you would like to join us for that, we're gonna do it Tuesday, 8:45 Eastern time is we're gonna kick off. We probably won't actually start the episode until closer to 9, just to let people kind of get in. But to do that, you'll need to join the Cosmic Crit Discord. What's Cosmic Crit? Well, it's our sister show. That Miles and I are both on, along with all of our friends, as we go and play the Starfinder tabletop RPG game from Paizo. We've been doing it for almost a decade now, and it's so much fun as we are doing a bunch of stuff. But you can go to CosmicCrit.com. In the upper right-hand corner, there is a link to the Cosmic Crit Discord. You can join it and, find your own games of Starfinder or Pathfinder and have your own fun there. Or just talk to me and Miles all day while we're bored at work. So that's CosmicCrit.com. If you'd like to find anything else that we've done, that's TheMoreYouNerd.com. That's TheMoreYouNerd.com, where you can find this and every other episode we've ever done. And you can find us on Blue Sky, although we don't post that much there right now, but we're working on it. And of course, one of the best ways to get a hold of us is to email us, TheMoreYouNerd@gmail.com. That's TheMoreYouNerd@gmail.com. Until then. End the show as we always do with a rousing
nerd out. Too nerd for y'all.